Okay, on the line with us right now is CJ Jones, who worked at WTMA at least two times. Now, the first time you were on WTMA, you weren't CJ Jones.
No, it was Johnny Prince.
And when was this now?
1964.
Was WTMA the first station you worked for?
No, I had worked for a station in college up in the Richmond area, but it was the first full-time job I had.
And do you remember what shift you were working at the time?
Yeah, midday. A guy named Doug Randall did mornings, and I did midday. And Bob Mitchell, who later went to WTIX in New Orleans as PD, did afternoon drive. And I wish I could remember the guy who was on at night. He was really wild, and it's very good, but I don't remember his name.
Okay, who was the program director at the time?
Bob Mitchell.
And how long were you at WTMA?
Not very long, maybe 4 or 5 months. And I was contacted by a fellow named George Weiss, who owned WBBQ in Augusta, and he was changing and looking for a program director, and I had that opportunity and took that, and that was just a real home run and really got my career moving.
Well, I didn't know you were at BBQ.
Oh, yeah. I was the original PD that switched that to Top 40.
What was it before?
Beautiful Music.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So that would have been about 65, maybe?
Yep, 1965.
And how long were you at BBQ?
About two and a half years, and then went to New Orleans. And then got into sales and then got into station ownership.
Now, you came back to Charleston when now?
Came back to Charleston in 1975. I had sold two stations in Florida that I had bought and came back, and an old friend of mine owned what was then WQSN, 1450 AM, a station that later I owned in a company that I formed. And it was really interesting because Doug Randall, who had been doing mornings on TMA when I was there midday, Doug had been the general manager of WQSN just before I arrived, and the owners had made a change and let him go for some reason. And I went in there, and we turned that around economically and rating-wise and got it in a position where they could sell it. About the time all of that was happening, and I was thinking about buying it, John Rivers Jr., who was then the president and CEO of WCSC Incorporated, called me and asked to have a meeting, and I went to his home down south abroad and sat and was offered a position of vice president, general manager of WCSC and then WXTC, later became executive vice president of that company, and I took that, and it was a very good move. Then it was there quite a while. We developed CJ and Buzz there. Buzz was an announcer who actually left the day I arrived. He had resigned, and he went to Key West for a sabbatical and got rolled by a chick and took all his money, and he called back and wanted to know if he could have his job back. It was a funny conversation. And when he came back, I needed a partner to create a new morning show for a lot of reasons. We'd had some problems with the morning show. And so we did the CJ and Buzz thing, and boy, that thing took off like crazy. Later, we went back to WTMA. When Sconix bought it, we decided that that was a good move. So we went to TMA and had a lot of fun there.
Who did you replace at WCSC?
Gloria Wilson was the general manager of radio and a wonderful woman who stayed with the company and became their human resources director. She had kind of had radio dumped on her by John as they were trying to figure out what to do with it. We had a great success over there. I think WCSC went from number 10 to number 1 in one rating book, and WXTC, their beautiful music station, which had been about number 4, came in number 2 in that rating book. So it exploded. It was just a fun time. CJ and Buzz, you know, we had cartoon characters and big, massive billboards and bus boards, just everywhere. It was well-promoted, and the whole station was, with a great air staff.
At that time, that probably marked the end of WTMA as a powerhouse, because WCSC was...
We knocked them off. It did. And my old friend, Booby Nash, Bob, was funny. He had been made the program director of WTMA about the time that I took over as general manager of WCSC. Bob later told me, he said, I felt like I had earned my stripes. I'd been there for years doing mornings, and finally I was going to be the program director, which meant I didn't have to really worry about a lot of things and wouldn't have to work real hard. And he said, and all of a sudden, you just kicked the you-know-what out of us. And it was funny. Later, shortly after that, we made a deal and hired Booby Nash from TMA, and he joined us on WCSC, and I can remember we made a big deal with a limo picking him up in front of TMA, which just really ticked him off, and drove over to WCSC with a television crew in the car and following, and we showed all that on the evening news, which always got our friendly competitors at the other radio stations upset, because we had Channel 5 and had a great working relationship promotionally. We took advantage of it.
Well, WCSC, when I came to town, was 1981. It was a great sounding radio station.
We had some great people. Bob Casey was the program director. Just a superb tacticianer, you know, very organized, really a great guy. Did a fantastic job over there.
Let's go back to WTMA and back to 1964. What do you remember about working at WTMA during
that
time?
Well, we were downtown then in the Dock Street Theater upstairs, and I know that we had a mute on the control room and studio monitors. We couldn't turn them up loud enough because we interfered with activities in the theater. And, of course, across the street from there was a beautiful old cemetery. It was kind of a strange setup. Here's this top 40 rock and roll early 60s radio station downtown in the oldest theater in the country, as I recall, right across from a cemetery. It was a little bizarre. Chuck Smith was the owner, and it was two stories. Downstairs were all the offices and the studios were upstairs. Bob Mitchell was a great program director, very innovative, kind of cutting edge for what was happening in those days. And that station just took off, and until WCSC beat it in the ratings years later, remained number one in Charleston for a long, long time. Top 40 was brand new, and as I recall, the competitor back then was WOKY.
WOKE?
WOKE, sorry, right. And those call letters, that's another story, they were originally in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and the guy who owned it moved to Charleston, and he brought the call letters with him and put them on his station, and he was doing Top 40, but not real well. It really wasn't formatted. He was just playing the music, and a lot of folks didn't know what to do with it back then. And we were extremely formatted and very tight and very careful and promoted the heck out of it, but with a lot of crazy things. I remember an April Fool's joke that Mitchell pulled, send us your name, address, and telephone number, and we will mail you $100, and the $100 was 100 pieces of paper with a mule on it bucking a can over. Made a lot of people mad, but it got a lot of laughs.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can't do that nowadays. They take your license from you, I think.
What else do you remember about WTMA from those days?
Just a very busy radio station everywhere in the community. Of course, Charleston was so small then compared to now or the in the 70s and 80s because the market exploded. It was a fun place to work. They didn't pay any money. Nobody made any money. In fact, years later, when I was general manager of WTMA for Skonix, we were cleaning out the attic, getting rid of a lot of old things. At the newer building, not downtown, they'd long since moved, and we came across old payroll records, and there were canceled checks made out to me when I made $75 a week.
Let's fast forward now to the second time that you were at WTMA.
Yeah.
You had left WCSC.
Right.
And you had gone directly across the street to WTMA.
Yep.
Working for Skonix.
Right. Randy O'Neill was the partner in town.
What was it like working at WTMA then? What kind of radio station did you enter, and what kind of changes did you make?
Well, I think we entered a station that was in a lot of upheaval. The ratings were bad, and the station had fallen on hard times. Now, it had an FM counterpart, WSSX, 95SX, and it was doing extremely well. So TMA was kind of sitting there and just not functioning, which is why Randy wanted me to come over. And we did more oldies than currents, but it was a current-based with a lot of oldies in it. Music-intensive and just kind of picked up the same thing we were doing at CSC, only repositioned it. Then we did a lot of new things with CJ and Buzz that freshened it and some really funky jingles, station and morning show-oriented. A lot of interaction with listeners on the air, which was always part of the CJ and Buzz show. TMA, just a great legendary set of call letters, great heritage, and a lot of respect for it.
Do you remember some of the announcers that you had on the staff at that time besides Buzz?
I don't know if you remember Big Mac or not, but Big Mac had been on 3WZ, as it was called, before it became Z93, and we hired Mac to come over and do nights. And he's a great guy. He worked for me later in Charleston at Hot 94 when we owned that, and then later stations that we bought in Augusta. He joined us down there to be the PD in mornings. A true character. A couple of funny stories about Big Mac and WTMA. One day I'm at my house and the family, and we're in the pool, and we're really relaxing. It's on a Saturday, and I get a phone call that the radio station's on fire. TMA and SX are both on fire. And Carolyn, my wife, and I jumped in the car and went charging down there. And it was a funny scene because when we pull in the parking lot, here is Reuben Greenberg, who's the police chief, and the fire department, the fire chief was there, and an EMS ambulance, and here's Big Mac laid out on a gurney getting ready to be lifted into the ambulance. And as I walk up, Reuben is kind of laughing, and I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Don't worry about it. Everything's under control. There was really no fire. A salamander had gotten into one of the transmitters and been zapped, and it created a strange odor that went through the air conditioning system. And Big Mac thought it was on fire, and he instructed everybody in the building to abandon the building." And I said, "No fire at all?" "Nope." I said, "Well, what's he doing on the gurney?" "Well, he's inhaled this salamander, and he thinks it's going to do some damage to him, so we're taking him to the hospital." There was absolutely nothing wrong with him, but he milked it for about a month. And then the second funny story, there used to be a loading dock behind TMA and SX. It was right on the Ashley River. One day, Mac came in, and he said, I got a problem. What? I've been bit by a black widow. Well, that's a funny line in itself, and we were always cutting up, and I thought, well, you know, there's nothing necessarily bad with being bitten by a black widow. And he said, no, man. I'm talking about a spider black widow. Let me show you. And he immediately started to lower his pants and show me his rear end. I said, stop. I got news for you, pal. I don't want to see that. He went to the hospital, and he had this big lump on him where this spider had bitten him. And what a character. Anyway, that developed into a whole lot of nothing, but was a big to-do for a while.
How long were you at WTMA that second time?
2 years.
And where did you go after that?
Funny story. I got a call out of the blue from a guy named George Beasley, who is the president and CEO of Beasley Broadcast Group, which is now a publicly traded company. Back then, it was a small, privately held company with headquarters in Goldsboro, North Carolina. And the guy who had worked for me in sales in Charleston at WCSC was working for him running Charleston, West Virginia. And in a conversation one day, George said, where'd you learn how to do this? And he was highly complimentary of me. He said, I know a guy down in Charleston that taught me everything I know, and he can do this and this, you know, wonderful story. And I really appreciated it. George called me, asked if I'd come up and meet with him. And I did. And he offered me a position as a group vice president of operations for Beasley, with oversight of the Midwest, Cleveland, Ohio, and Evansville, Indiana, and Charleston, West Virginia, where this friend of mine was working. His name is David Chandler. And went and did that, and within a few months, Beasley's number one property, its biggest market, the one it had paid the most money for and was in a lot of trouble, WXTU-FM in Philadelphia, was kind of hemorrhaging money, and George called, and I went in there and physically took that over and was there a little over 3 years, and we made a massive, big, winning country music radio station out of that in Philadelphia. Everybody thought we were nuts, but it really worked. Buzz, we hired. We didn't do CJ and Buzz, but Buzz did mornings up there, brought him up from Charleston. He did a wonderful job. As a matter of fact, while he was doing mornings on WXTU, the program director, Bob Young, managed to put a deal together where United Stations, a network that Dick Clark owned at that time out of New York City, hired Buzz to voice their national country music specials that they ran about twice a month around the country. So he would take the Metro Liner up one day and spend the day in New York and voice these shows and come back. He had a ball.
Then what happened after Philadelphia?
Decided to go into business for myself. Found an investment banker. We created a company, Jones Eastern Radio, and we bought stations in Charleston, the old WQSN AM, and a station that was licensed to Goose Creek, an FM. We bought an AM-FM in Myrtle Beach, which became Y103. It was the number one country station there when we owned it for a long time. AM-FM in Wilmington, North Carolina, WVBS, was B100, also highly rated, number one. And a big, big coverage station that covered the Outer Banks of North Carolina from Norfolk down Elizabeth City, Nags Head, all that area. So we had those four markets and those stations. And then expanded into Augusta, Georgia with a couple of more later, and then out into Louisiana and Texas, and then eventually sold them.
Wow, and then what did you do after that?
I went to our home in the mountains of North Carolina and sat on a rocker on the front porch and thought, life is good, and I'm going to enjoy this. And I got so bored so fast, it was unbelievable. And was looking to buy more stations, but the massive consolidation was happening then, where individual companies like Clear Channel and Citadel and company I'm now with, Cumulus Media, were really buying everything and paying high prices for them. And it just didn't make a lot of sense. And a friend of mine who was on the board of directors of Saga Communications in Detroit, actually Grosse Pointe Farms, suburb of Detroit, called. President of that company was also an old acquaintance of mine, and they asked if I would be interested in running their European operations, which turned out to be Iceland. I mean, it sounded great when it was European operations. And then when I realized it was Iceland, I went, wait a minute, what am I doing? But I flew over and spent a week in Reykjavik and met people, and I took that. And for a little over a year, took what was the largest radio company in that country, built it up, made it a success. We had 7 FM stations in the capital city and 5 more around the country. And about 65, 70 people on the staff, and we did everything from top 40 to beautiful music to classical music and oldies and rock and talk, all in Icelandic. A lot of fun. We ended up selling that to the big television company, which now has most of the radio and TV stuff. when we did that, which was maybe a year sooner than I thought we would do it because we just got in a position where it made sense to make the sale, contacted some friends of mine at Cumulus. They invited me to join them and gave me an opportunity, an option on a number of markets, and I picked the one that I really wanted to start at, and they hired me primarily to be a troubleshooter and where they had difficult markets to go in and fix them. And I'm now in the third Cumulus market like that, where I have gone in, replaced the market manager that was there, physically stayed in the market until we got it fixed, and then brought somebody else in, and I moved on to the next market. So I've enjoyed doing that, and that's what I'm doing now.